What a difference a day made. 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers.
Happy 2017. Hello, Pacifica Radio Network. You're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil, heard on KPFK Safe Harbor, No Lies Radio, and WRFG on occasion so far. All Pacifica Network radio stations. Our audience is growing. That's because Cynthia's Midnight Oil is raw, uncut, community power for your eardrums. Cynthia's Midnight Oil is where I can tell you the truth, like this. Although January is almost over, the chill is still in the air. However, with one big difference, Donald J. Trump is now President of the United States of America. I can still hardly believe the transition. But here it is, and the Democrats only have themselves to blame because they were hell-bent on nominating a candidate who was so gross, so unpalatable, so totally and thoroughly unacceptable that, in my humble opinion, they deserve this moment even more than the rest of us. And until the Democratic Party undergoes regime change, that is, a complete revamping of its culture, its ethos, its raison d'etre, it should remain in its ignominious self-chosen place. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard is a bright star over there. And really, it is she who should have been the Democratic leader in the House, with Bernie Sanders taking that position in the Senate. But instead, the Dems clung to their old tried and true toastmasters of the rejected ancien regime. And they will earn every minute of disdain that they get from the people able to see through the fake cloud created by special interest, sycophantic media, and CIA propaganda against this new president, President Trump. That's why, here at Cynthia's Midnight Oil, you can count on me going against the grain, always following the evidence to uncover the deceptions now proliferating around us. But just remember, these are the same media that colluded with the Hillary Clinton campaign to subvert voters' choice and democracy in the U.S. This is the same media that lied about September 11th, deceived us into the Iraq War, misled us into the destruction of Libya, bamboozle us right now about Syria, dupe and betray the public about the U.S. bombing campaigns and country destruction in Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Ukraine, and Haiti. And that have tricked the public about, quote unquote, radical Islamic terrorism. Yeah, let's talk about terrorism and who the real terrorists are. This is the same media that hoodwinked the world until Sudan was split, and that will still be deceiving us, even as their bosses proceed to split other countries like Democratic Republic of Congo. Yes, this is the press that will continue its deceptions until its special interest money runs out. Therefore, I want you to consider this show as your liberated zone, where the shackles on your mind are the first to go. You might get shocked, maybe even outraged, but my hope is that you will not think about things in the same way. That you will have a disorienting dilemma that will cause you to completely rethink what you thought was conventional and what you consider to be wisdom. Remember, the great South African anti-apartheid leader Steve Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
The club isn't the best place to find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. And you come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me.
Did I get that one right?
Chief Justice Roberts, President Carter, President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, fellow Americans, and people of the world, thank you. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come. We will face challenges. We will confront hardships. But we will get the job done. Every 4 years, we gather on these steps to carry out the orderly and peaceful transfer of power. And we are grateful to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama for their gracious aid throughout this transition. They have been magnificent. Thank you. Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Their victories have not been your victories. Their triumphs have not been your triumphs. And while they celebrated in our nation's capital, there was little to celebrate for struggling families all across our land. That all changes, starting right here and right now, because this moment is your moment. It belongs to you. It belongs to everyone gathered here today and everyone watching all across America. This is your day. This is your celebration. And this, the United States of America, is your country. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. Everyone is listening to you now. You came by the tens of millions to become part of a historic movement, the likes of which the world has never seen before. At the center of this movement is a crucial conviction that a nation exists to serve its citizens. Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just and reasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation, an education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge, and the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now. We are one nation. And their pain is our pain. Their dreams are our dreams, and their success will be our success. We share one heart, one home, and one glorious destiny. The oath of office I take today is an oath of allegiance to all Americans. For many decades, we've enriched foreign industry at the expense of American industry, subsidized the armies of other countries while allowing for the very sad depletion of our military. We've defended other nations' borders while refusing to defend our own. And spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas, while America's infrastructure has fallen into disrepair and decay. We've made other countries rich, while the wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has dissipated over the horizon. One by one, the factories shuttered and left our shores, with not even a thought about the millions and millions of American workers that were left behind. The wealth of our middle class has been ripped from their homes and then redistributed all across the world. But that is the past, and now we are looking only to the future. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. I will fight for you with every breath in my body, and I will never, ever let you down. America will start winning again, winning like never before. We will bring back our jobs. We will bring back our borders. We will bring back our wealth. And we will bring back our dreams. We will build new roads and highways and bridges and airports and tunnels and railways all across our wonderful nation. We will get our people off of welfare and back to work, rebuilding our country with American hands and American labor. We will follow two simple rules: buy American and hire American. We will seek friendship and goodwill with the nations of the world. But we do so with the understanding that it is the right of all nations to put their own interests first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth. At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice. The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We must speak our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity. When America is united, America is totally unstoppable. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. Finally, we must think big and dream even bigger. In America, we understand that a nation is only living as long as it is striving. We will no longer accept politicians who are all talk and no action, constantly complaining but never doing anything about it. The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action. Do not allow anyone to tell you that it cannot be done. No challenge can match the heart and fight and spirit of America. We will not fail. Our country will thrive and prosper again. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the Earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots. We all enjoy the same glorious freedoms, and we all salute the same great American flag. And whether a child is born in the urban sprawl of Detroit or the windswept plains of Nebraska, they look up at the same night sky, they fill their heart with the same dreams, and they are infused with the breath of life by the same Almighty Creator. So to all Americans in every city, near and far, small and large, from mountain to mountain, from ocean to ocean, hear these words. You will never be ignored again. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. And your courage and goodness and love will forever guide us along the way. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
That body on me. I'm coming now, follow my lead. Come, coming now, follow my lead. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body.
Well, that's the speech that made it official. But I suspect that most people didn't even listen to what he had to say. So many of my friends are too busy being afraid or are protesting or have already condemned the election, believing the prostitutes and the Hillary Russian hacking mean that they don't want to hear a word that Trump says. So here on Cynthia's Midnight Oil, we'll at least be ahead of the game because we'll listen to what he has to say and then judge accordingly. And so far, I think that President Trump said exactly what I would expect a U.S. president to say in his inauguration speech. Even that expectation is revolutionary, it seems, and offends some people. Trump's inauguration speech was called anti-Semitic by one NBC commentator, Terry Moran, who called the words America first a quote-unquote loaded term here in America. I wonder for whom the term is actually loaded. Listen to this palaver from Moran.
First, it's a loaded term in American history. Now, he defined it here as total allegiance to the United States of America. And it is something, as Cecilia said, this is why he was sent here. by people who want to hear that message of America first. However, it carries with it overtones from the 1930s when an anti-Semitic movement saying we don't want to get involved in Europe's war. It's the Jews' fault in Germany. Charles Lindbergh led them. It is a term, as he defined it, his way. But the words themselves carry very ugly echoes in our history.
Such an assertion, of course, is ridiculous and shows just how far certain special interests have so thoroughly dominated the political discourse in this country that standing up for U.S. workers and advocating U.S. jobs and U.S. redevelopment and infrastructure investments instead of war, war, and more war against made-up enemies is viewed as quote-unquote loaded language. Just as bad, and of course, following the prostitute media talking points, Chris Matthews labeled Trump's America First thing as quote-unquote Hitlerian. Right on cue, the prostitute media in the U.S. is fighting for its position tooth and nail by omission and by outright lying. This leads me back to the show 2 weeks ago when I discussed the ideas put forward by Peter Turchin of Clio Dynamics and the book written by Seymour Hersh entitled The Samson Option. On that show, I pronounced my belief that one faction of the U.S. deep state, that faction aligned with and served by the public face of Hillary Clinton, has declared all-out war against Trump and any other Western capital that rejects its vision of global hegemony by way of globalization. Understanding the rise and fall of empires and states, and also understanding that one faction of the deep state has always managed to get its way by means of threats, bribes, and intimidation, I believe it is possible to understand the position of the Trump administration today. For some who populate the Hillary Clinton faction of the U.S. deep state, nothing short of all-out war will be waged. That's why I posted on my social media a warning that the tone being set in the U.S. today is highly reminiscent of what I've read about in 1963, particularly after President Kennedy gave his peace speech at the commencement ceremony of American University. After all, 17 intelligence agencies came out in agreement that the Russians had, quote unquote, hacked the election by influencing voters through the reportage of RT and Sputnik. Now, most Americans aren't even paying attention to CNN and CBS, let alone RT and Sputnik. I've heard some say that there will be protests every day of Trump's administration. Now, I do believe in protest, and I believe in advocacy. But if these people aren't also articulating an agenda or a set of policy proposals or disagreements with Trump, then something else is going on. What I hope is that they're not just protesting and saying that Trump is not their president. And what I hope even further is that these people are not protesting because they wanted Hillary to win the election. Now, that is flat out wrong, or worse, that there is money available to protest, not for an agenda, but just to protest, to boost the numbers and give the appearance of huge anti-Trump protests. So let's take a look at the deep state that is supportive of these protests. That is the shadow money people in the Hillary faction of the deep state. We already know that if one happens to be anti-war or pro-peace or even pro-USA. No dissent at all is tolerated. I know this firsthand, as Congresswoman Nita Loy assuredly told me, as always, speaking for the pro-Israel lobby, and certainly not for the people of the U.S., this is what she told me. Cynthia, this is a quote. Cynthia, every vote has its consequence. And yes, I had voted against the thumbs up support to Tony Blair for going to war with Georgie Boy. And I had voted against all of those AIPAC-written shill bills congratulating Israel for killing Palestinian children. Yes, for them, every vote and every word has its consequence. Hence, as long as the money lasts, Trump will be faced with protests. Also, he will face a testy Congress unless he moves to elect his own, because remember, he ran against both Democrats in Congress and Republicans. So, as these two factions of the U.S. deep state duke it out, watch and see who's who. Don't be surprised when your progressive icons like Congresswoman Barbara Lee or Congresswoman Maxine Waters intone the Hillary Clinton meme of Russian hacking, or the one that goes, "Trump's not my president." The point I want to reiterate is that this is a particularly dangerous time, with Senator Chuck Schumer saying that it was unwise for Trump to pick a fight with the CIA. Remember, I played that. What he meant was it was unwise for Trump to pick a fight with the portion of the CIA, the faction of the CIA that is in alignment with his interests and those espoused by Hillary Clinton. And remember, I came out early and said that Pence was quote unquote lone nut bait, since Pence is someone that both factions of the deep state can work with, and that importantly, the Hillary faction of the deep state actually likes. Trump is right to attack shill members of Congress who pander to foreign interests yet do little for their districts. I've seen the blight in too many districts for members of Congress to be protesting instead of participating in transformational redevelopment plans that are now possible for their districts. The voters need to follow up and elect members of Congress able to withstand the temptations of the foreign and special interest lobbies.
If this night is not forever, at least we are together. I know I'm not alone, I know I'm not alone. Anywhere, whenever, apart we're still together. I know I'm not alone, I know.
Now, I didn't believe it when I heard it. Remember the German journalist who wrote the book and called out his fellow journalists for taking bribes from the CIA to write pro-US and anti-Russia news stories? Well, he's dead. I couldn't believe it when I heard it because I had just featured him on this show just before Christmas. You see, these people are serious, just like the situation with the death of Monica Peterson, a young woman who was working in Haiti for the Human Trafficking Center, whose last few social media actions before her death were sharing a story critical of Hillary's actions in Haiti, ranging from election deceptions, land grabbing, and mining contracts, as the author said. The author, by the way, was a Haitian, and accused the Hillary Clinton and the foundation of, quote unquote, using the power of the U.S. State Department for their own personal enrichment by means of exploiting Haiti. So Monica Peterson is dead, believed to have been investigating the stories revealed in the WikiLeaks published emails about the relationship between Hillary and that woman, Laura Silsby, who was caught with 33 Haitian children, stealing them from the country. WikiLeaks emails indicate that Hillary took a personal interest in the Silsby case after Haitian authorities detained the U.S. citizen adults who were smuggling the Haitian children out of the country. So, Udo Ufkata is dead. That's the German journalist. And Monica Peterson is dead. Ufkata will go down as a hero for sure in Germany and in the U.S. for those of us who paid attention to him. But I'm wondering if the struggle for truth was worth his death. Like I oftentimes wonder aloud, if we are as a country where we are after the loss of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to his family, I mean, you know, was it worth it? Dr. King's children, who grew up without a dad, they have to be disappointed that their father was willing to give so much for people who don't appreciate that. And a whole lot of people today wouldn't even recognize him if he was walking down the street next to him. And really the same goes for Udo Ufkata and his family. He said he knew when he wrote the whistleblowing book that it could cost him his life. He said so in the clip that I played in show before last. But he went forward with his choice that we should know the truth. So the question I have is, was knowing the truth worth his life? Has his death made journalism better? Has it made our activism sharper in focus? Well, I don't have an answer to these questions yet, but it's something that I still continue to ponder. And therefore, I mourn the deaths of Udo and Monica and continue to wonder. Last week, I informed you of the citizen researcher who is doing a fabulous job of pouring through the WikiLeaks emails to gain clues on how the Hillary Clinton faction of the deep state has defrauded the people of the U.S., and in particular, the people of Haiti, Libya, and Syria. Now, George Webb, that citizen researcher, I believe is onto something, using their own words from their own emails. Well, I believe he's someone we need to pay attention to, and so I will. But on this show, I'm pleased to report that I actually reached out and was able to speak to him briefly on the phone just to tell him that I think he's headed in the right direction and to keep up the good work. He also repeatedly notes that his research today is a continuation of what I was doing when I was in the Congress, paying attention to the way the money works, thanks to Catherine Austin Fitz, particularly in the Pentagon, and against the interests of the people of the U.S., the soldiers, and against the interests of other countries, but that benefited certain personalities of power inside the U.S. deep state. He also keeps reminding folks that doing nothing against something that is bad and rotten won't make the bad and rotten go away. Generally, what happens, he continues to point out, is that the situation gets worse. And so it is with the missing $2.3 trillion that I spoke to Rumsfeld about, and the DynCorp trafficking in women and little girls that I also questioned Rumsfeld about. So now, Webb is trying to understand how that unaccounted for Pentagon money, which is now up to like $6 trillion, is being used, and the extent to which Hillary's interest in the Laura Silsby case indicates turning a blind eye by the Clinton State Department to child sex trafficking. Social media are awash with quote-unquote Pizzagate stories that are derived directly from the Podesta email. See, that's what nobody's telling you. They're talking about fake news, but they're not telling you the content of those emails from the Clinton Foundation, the Democratic National Committee, and the Hillary Clinton campaign, and John Podesta himself. So, veteran journalist Ben Swan, working from CBS in Atlanta, did the unthinkable. He actually raised the issue of Pizzagate in a serious journalism piece. So here's Ben Swan's reality check on Pizzagate.
Well, Pizzagate, it became a major story weeks ago when an armed man decided to investigate a DC area pizza place for himself. This man right here, he carried a rifle into a pizza parlor and then fired it at the floor. Media is telling you the entire story is a hoax or fake news. But what does that even mean? I spent the last month investigating. So what exactly is Pizzagate? And are there any actual facts to support the story? I've got to warn you, what we're going to talk about tonight will be disturbing to some people. But this is a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Pizzagate actually comes from the WikiLeaks release of hacked emails from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. In all, WikiLeaks dumped around 50,000 email messages, and it was from those emails that the claims that John Podesta may be part of a child sex trafficking ring come from. Now, to be clear, not one single email in the Podesta emails discusses child sex trafficking or pedophilia. That is a fact. But there are dozens of what seem to be strangely worded emails dealing with pizza and handkerchiefs. Self-described online investigators say that those words in the emails about pizza and the talk of handkerchiefs is code language used by pedophiles. So how did a DC pizza parlor get pulled into the story? Well, again, read any mainstream report and they indicate that Comet Ping Pong Pizza was somehow linked to this fake story and has no relation to anyone involved. But the truth is, that's not true either. What media is ignoring is that the Comet Ping Pong Pizza place is actually referenced in the Podesta emails at least a dozen or so times, and that the owner of that place, James Alfantis, is a friend of John Podesta. He was actually named, this is kind of strange, by GQ magazine as one of the top 50 most powerful people in Washington. Yes, we're talking about a pizza parlor owner. Now let's talk facts here. There is no solid evidence that Comet Ping Pong Pizza is being used to run a child sex trafficking ring. But there are some very strange connections between Comet Ping Pong Pizza and a second pizza place two doors over, Besta Pizza, and the accusations of pedophilia. Now, this is where things start to get strange when you research this story. Now, to begin, I need to show you a 2007 unclassified FBI document. That document, according to the FBI, contains commonly used symbols by pedophiles to express their preference in children. I want you to see these images here. These are the images. Notice this one on the end, the triangle. That image signifies something called boy love. The pizza place next door to Comet Ping Pong Pizza, Besta Pizza, well, this was their logo until only a few weeks ago. Clearly, you can see that the Besta logo actually contains the same image, I'm going to show you again, as that boy lover image. Interestingly, after Pizzagate investigators pointed this out, Besta Pizza changed their logo, and there it is now. They've removed the triangle. Also, Comet Ping Pong, owned by Alfantis, is the place where a number of performance artists perform regularly. Two of the groups that perform there, who you can see advertised, by the way, on this Comet Ping Pong poster, include a group called Heavy Breathing and another group called Sex Stains. Well, if you check out the YouTube videos by these bands, Heavy Breathing has songs that do joke about pedophilia. And the band Sex Stains has a video that includes, and you see it right there, that same boy lover symbol. It's nearly identical to the one that the FBI does say is a pedophile code symbol for boy love. As I said, there are some strange things there. As for the owner of the pizza place, James Alphantis, well, he was one time in a relationship with David Brock, who ran Media Matters for America. Well, since Pizzagate began to blow up online, he has made his Instagram profile, Jimmy Comet, private. But an archive search of Instagram reveals a number of strange photographs and words with strange and disturbing images associated with them. Look, to the point where we can't show you those pictures. We're not even going to describe them to you because some viewers would find it too disturbing to share on TV. Now let's talk about the Podesta brothers, because remember, it was John Podesta's email that was hacked. In those leaked Podesta emails, John Podesta talks about his close relationship with Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House, who was recently sentenced to 15 months in prison for abusing boys years ago. He was referred to by the judge as a serial child molester. According to the Washington Post, visitors to Tony Podesta's home in Falls Church got an eyeful when they walked into a bedroom at the Podesta residence hung with multiple color pictures by Katie Grannon, a photographer known for documentary-style pictures of naked teenagers in their parents' suburban homes. And to be clear, that just begins to scratch the surface of how strange some of this stuff is. And bear in mind, we can't get into a lot of the real details of it because of the limits on broadcasting this on television. But it is some very strange stuff. Now keep in mind, again, there is no proof here that there is a child sex ring being operated out of a DC pizza parlor. Investigators have already proven there's nothing to this story, right? Well, actually, no. And that's what you need to know. For all that is here, there has not been one single public investigation of any of this. Not from local police, not from the FBI, no one. And that has to be the big question. Not for Podesta or for pizza parlor owners, but for law enforcement. Based on what may be or may not be here, the big question is, why hasn't any investigation taken place? That's Reality Check. Let's talk about it on Twitter.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network. The question is, when will enough of the people wake up so that their government becomes clear to them? And even then, I have to ask if they will take action to stop whatever is wrong that needs to be stopped. Some of that awakening process began with the rejection of Hillary Clinton as president of the United States, an unthinkable thought that almost happened. Citizen investigators like George Webb and true journalists like Ben Swan are also helping people to wake up. However, we still have a long way to go if we are to have a government that is truly representative of all of us. Or, now, this is also a scary question that's also lurking in the back of my mind. Does the U.S. government truly represent the U.S. people? If the answer to that is yes, then world, we're in a lot of trouble. But I have to believe that Donald Trump's election, no matter how narrow, was a solid rejection of the Hillary Clinton neoliberal U.S. deep state faction that is able to wantonly kill people all over the world for its geostrategic priorities that don't even include the national interest of the U.S. And that's also willing to allow U.S. people to go jobless, hungry, and homeless in order to satisfy its own insatiable greed. I so deeply want to think that the world is getting more decent, one person at a time. I remember that Bobby Kennedy said, and this is a quote, "Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. If I really believe that, I have to keep going. I can't get tired, except maybe sick and tired of being sick and tired. Donald Trump has the ability to neutralize his critics by doing good works, by keeping foremost in his mind the plight of the people in the U.S. and all the people around the world who are affected by U.S. policy. This is Cynthia McKinney, and you've been listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me.